This morning, our scripture is a familiar story for this day and this time of year. It comes from John, the 20th chapter. Early in the morning of the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. She ran to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said, "They've taken the Lord from the tomb, and we don't know where they've put him." Peter and the other disciple left to go to the tomb. They were running together, but the other disciple ran faster than Peter and was the first to arrive at the tomb. Bending down to take a look, he saw the linen cloths lying there, but he didn't go in. Following him, Simon Peter entered the tomb and saw the linen cloths lying there. He also saw the face cloth that had been on Jesus' head. It wasn't with the other cloths, but was folded up in its own place. Then the other disciple, the one who arrived at the tomb first, also went inside. He saw and believed. They didn't yet understand the scripture that Jesus must rise from the dead. Then the disciples returned to the place where they were staying.
They returned to the place where they were staying. Wow. That's a strange reaction, don't you think? Let's set this up briefly, borrowed from my favorite characters on the Golden Girls. Sophia, who would say, "Picture this." So, picture this. You're one of these guys, you've been following Jesus for the entire period of his ministry. You were there when people were hungry, lots of people with no food, and Jesus took 5 loaves and 2 fish and fed them. You doubted he could do it, and you told him of your doubt, but he did it, and with food left over. Picture this. Now, you were there when another guy named Lazarus died, and his sisters were upset with Jesus, sort of scolded Jesus about delaying his time and coming, and said, "You came too late." The sisters also joined the disciples in doubting Jesus that day. And then Jesus, we know the story, said to Lazarus, "Rise up." And he did. Picture this. You were there when lepers and Samaritans, when women and children, the poor and the outcast, you were there when all of these were kept away from Jesus because they were not good enough by society's standards. You were there. You saw all of them left out of the circle of power or privilege or even the basic acknowledgments that they were human beings. You doubted that anyone could make those people whole or accepted or loved or embraced. But Jesus did that too. You were there to see all of this. Jesus giving his life as an example of how to be in full relationship and covenant with God's purpose for his life. You watched it all. And you had a front row seat. And then, bam. This man, who you left family and home and job and friends to follow, the one who you'd seen lead this miracle-filled life, the one who did all these incredible things, he was murdered in the worst possible way because he would not stop doing and advocating. He would not stop loving the unloved, accepting the unacceptable, and calling out anyone and everyone, political powers, religious bigots, people full of themselves and pushing their power around and around to influence and oppress folks. He would not stop going against that grain. And so they killed him. Friends, that's the Holy Week story we've just walked through. And to be sure, it is a painful reminder of what Jesus went through. For the front row disciples on the heels of Jesus' death, their doubt and their fear had taken over, tucked away for fear that, hey, I might be next. Because the same people that killed Jesus were intent on killing anyone who followed him. See, they wanted to stop the message at all cost. So the disciples were all hunkered down, pondering their what next move. And in their hunkering, they get a visitor. Mary Magdalene. Mary had been to the tomb and found that the stone was rolled away. So she ran back. She ran to tell Simon Peter and an unnamed disciple about this. And it's an interesting side note, is it not, that the writer of John has Mary tell Peter, the mover and shaker of the Jesus movement, the one who Jesus said, upon this rock, I'll build my church. So John has Mary go tell Peter and an unnamed disciple. But who the writer of John said was the one that Jesus loved. I wonder how the other ones felt when they read that. I have to pause here then and note this intentional nod of John's gospel, for the two men who were in a foot race to see the stone removed were Peter, who was a key disciple, also the one who denied knowing Jesus three times before he was killed. And joining Peter in the race was an unnamed disciple that Jesus loved. We never got the name. So it's a key guy and an unnamed guy. Odd couple, wouldn't you say? I interpret this to mean that whether we are key folks or unnoticed, we are all invited to the empty tomb. And we all have an intention and a place at God's table. You see, it's with that interpretation, it gives me hope that a small little church on Don Anna Drive that had the doors locked three Easters ago. Do you hear me, church? Had the doors locked on this place three Easters ago. Can somehow in some way be a part of the resurrection story. There were a lot of churches celebrating Easter Sunday in 2014. Miss Elnora, Jose, Jewel. But this one. This unnoticed one had locked doors. And I know its members were hunkered down a bit, not sure what to do next. Think about that for a minute. These doors were locked in 2014. And you know what we've been knocking down since then? Walls. Twice. Take a look around. Look to the back. We've knocked down internal walls to make room for more to join and be a part of us. And we've extended way beyond these walls to bring a resurrection story to our community. Resurrection indeed. Back to our scripture story. Peter and the unnamed guy go to the tomb, and look what happened next. Peter peeked his head in. He saw the linens used to wrap Jesus up. He saw him laying there, but he didn't go in at first. The unnamed love guy was there too. And eventually, he and Peter went in the tomb. And our scripture says he believed. Wonder which one believed. Both? Peter? Unnamed guy? Not sure what he believed, not sure who believed what. John doesn't say. But after they ran to the tomb, obviously they wanted to get there. They had urgency to see it. One of them hesitates in going in. The other one goes in and believes something. And then verse 10 says, they returned to their homes. That's it. Let's call it a day, boys, and go home. Does anyone here but me think that Peter and the unnamed man had a strange reaction to the rising of Jesus? But the story continues.
Mary stood outside near the tomb crying. As she cried, she bent down to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels dressed in white, seated where the body of Jesus had been, one at the head and one at the foot. The angels asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" She replied, "They've taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they've put him." As soon as she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there. But she didn't know it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who are you looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she replied, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've put him, and I will get him." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Don't hold on to me, for I haven't yet gone up to my Father. Go to my brothers and sisters and tell them, I'm going up to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene left and announced to the disciples, "I've seen the Lord." Then she told them what he said to her.
After Peter and the unnamed guy go home, Mary's still standing at the tomb, weeping. Her heart was broken. She was overcome with grief. She saw two angels sitting where Jesus had been laid, and they asked her why she was crying, and she said, "They've taken my Lord, and I don't know where they've laid him." Ah, where they've laid him. It's a clear indicator that Mary did not expect anything more than someone had stolen Jesus' body and taken it somewhere. "I don't know where they've laid him," she said, sitting at an empty tomb. I've been at an empty tomb a time or two in my life. Growing up in a church where I was very involved, only to be kicked out at the age of 28 because of my sexuality. Told that I couldn't sing anymore. I couldn't be in church leadership anymore. So I spent the next 7 Easter Sundays and all the days in between at an empty tomb. I've been at the empty tomb. When a business crumbles in my hands, employees lose jobs. Bank accounts sink far below the break-even and financial disaster occurs. Friends, I've been at the empty tomb. When a beloved father dies. My biggest fan. I was only 25. I've been at the empty tomb weeping, my friends. When a 24-year-old nephew that was like a son to me overdoses after a 7-year battle with drug addiction. Have you ever been at the empty tomb weeping? When life takes a sudden turn, when relationships are strained, it seems beyond repair, when church family or family connections lose their signal, when a medical diagnosis rocks your world or that of someone you love. Are there any empty tombs in the house this morning? Any yearnings? Any wondering, what just happened? If you aren't at the empty tomb or haven't been a good long while, be grateful for that. But whether you're there now or will be tomorrow, empty tombs are all around us. See, Mary was weeping at the empty tomb because it was like her empty heart. And then something changed that Kenny read so beautifully. "Woman, why are you weeping? Who are you looking for?" Mary said to this guy who looked like the gardener, "Please, please," she said, "please tell me where you've taken his body so I can take proper care of it." My translation. And the gardener said, "Rabboni, teacher." And then the gardener said, "Mary." And then it happened. She knew Jesus was alive. Now let me speak to this resurrection story, for it can be the elephant in the room. You may be here convinced this morning without one shadow, one ounce of doubt, that Jesus physically resurrected. And this exchange with Mary Magdalene proves it. You may be here convinced without one ounce of doubt that Jesus spiritually resurrected. And that this exchange with Mary was somewhat similar to when I hear my dad's voice speaking to me as clearly as I do when he was living, saying, "Marsh, don't weep at the empty tombs of your life. There's always hope." On any given day, to be honest, I find myself somewhere in the middle of the beliefs of resurrections and how that happened. But for me, the details don't matter. That may shock you. I hope you'll come back and learn more about that. But it's the same answer I give folks when they want me to tell them what I think happens after we die. I don't know. But the unknown doesn't bother me. The unknown about Jesus' resurrection doesn't bother me either. Because whether physical, spiritual, or both, here's what I know to be true. God's presence is alive and well. For thousands of years, literally, people have tried to silence God's message of inclusive love and amazing grace. And we find ourselves struggling with political and religious authorities who try to define who's in and who's out. Who's left out of society? Who's left out of church? Who's left out of God's vision? Why do I know that God's presence is real? Why do I believe in the resurrection? There have been times I left empty tombs. Called her today. Tucked my tail and went back home. But thanks be to God, there have been many, many other times in my moments of deepest grief and despair, weeping at empty tombs of rejection and failure and disappointment and loss and even anger, I've heard God's voice. I've felt God's presence. I've joined Mary in saying, "I've seen God." A few years ago, I was at one of the emptiest tombs of my life. You see, I was in my final year of seminary. I had gone to the authorities in my denomination at the time, and I told them that I wanted to put my papers out to have churches consider me as their pastor. I shared with some of y'all before, I don't know why God called me to be a pastor. I can't explain it any better than I can explain the resurrection of Jesus or our afterlife. I was told on that day that no church would hire me as their pastor. I was too active in the LGBT community. I was too vocal about social justice issues. I was too out. Now remember, it had been 20 years since the church I'd grown up in told me I couldn't be in church leadership or sing anymore. Now here I was, 20 years later, sitting again at another empty church tomb. Sitting in my car in a parking lot on Red Mile Road, weeping. That same week, another minister in town, Reverend Dr. Nancy Jo Kemper, asked me to come sing in her church. "Sing," I said. I need another break from church. For I was still sitting at an empty tomb of another church rejection, wondering what in the world just happened. I told her that I would sing, but I had no clue what I would sing. I called her back and I said, "Nancy Jo, what you preaching about?" She said, "I'm going to invite folks to consider why or why not they believe in God." As I was mowing the yard a day or so later, I heard a voice say, just as clearly as if one of you all were talking to me, I heard a voice saying, "Marsh, I know what you've heard from others, but listen to me. I want you. I need you to serve in my world. There are people who are hurting or indifferent because they're stuck weeping at empty tombs of misunderstanding, of rejection, of hypocrisy. Don't lose heart because they say they don't want you. Look around. Look around you and see me. For I live in you. Open your eyes and your heart and believe." I turned off my lawnmower. I went in the house. I sat at my piano. And I began to write. I can feel the Easter spirit as daylight breaks the sky. A gentle spirit in the simple breath of air. When the lily brings forth new life, when the sunlight warms the earth, resurrection comes, I feel it everywhere. In the new cry of a baby, in the ages' twinkling eyes, when a life unfolds, God's image can be seen. But God knows us as we journey. Mysteries. I believe because God's presence lives on me. I believe because I feel God in my blood. In the as I live into life's journey, I believe. And this little one's journey's just starting, huh? Any empty tombs this morning, friends? Here's what God says to us. We are called to walk together as we take each other's hands, serving faithfully to give each other strength.
Thank you.
Reaching out to those excluded, giving love to those ignored. Listen to this line. For without us all, God's circle is not complete. Sing with me. I believe because God's presence lives within me. I believe because I feel God by my side. In the resurrection spirit, may I live with hope each day as I live into life's journey. I believe. Do we believe? Let's sing it again. Brothers and sisters, we've heard the various reactions to the rising by Peter, the unnamed man, and Mary. As we find ourselves at empty tombs, what might be our reaction to the rising? Will we just call it a day and continue to hunker down in fear and disappointment, indifference, frustration, and anger as Peter and the unnamed and loved man did? Will we choose, hear me now, will we choose to stay at the empty tomb in emotional or physical paralysis as Mary did? Will we give up on our dreams as a certain soon-to-be seminary graduate did back in 2000?